Investiture of the Gods, Chapter 32.
It starts with the arrival, right?
Huang Tianhua.
Tong Pass, about 5 a.m. Feihu's basically dying on a mat.
And then, poof, someone appears using Tudun.
Tudun, Earth Escape.
Yeah, it's a kind of specialized travel for immortals or, you know, highly trained practitioners. Near instant movement.
And the person arriving is?
Huang Tianhua, Feihu's son, who's been missing for years. And he's not just family. He's a Liang Qixi.
Right, a Liang Qixi. So for anyone maybe not familiar, that's basically a super trained Taoist warrior, right? Practices Qi refinement.
Exactly. Sort of semi-immortal through intense training. Tianhua studied under King Su Daud Zhenjun on King Feng Mountain.
So this is like the supernatural cavalry arriving, the big guns.
Definitely. And the description of him isn't just, you know, a soldier arrived. It paints a picture. He's got this top knot, the big Taoist robe.
And the text compares him to a Quilin. The mythical creature.
Yeah, symbolizing good luck, divine power. But the really crucial things are what he's carrying. A dangerous-looking sword on his back. And this flower basket, it's described as holding mystery.
The flower basket. Okay, so he gets there, sees his father.
And it's bad. Feihu's pale as white paper, totally silent. Looks dead. And remember, one of Feihu's sworn brothers was killed by the same weapon.
But Tianhua doesn't hesitate.
No time for grief yet. He acts immediately. Demands water from a stream, Jiangxia water, specifically.
And then the medicine from that flower basket.
Pulled right out of the flower basket.
Yeah.
And the way he administers it, it's intense.
How so?
Well, Feihu's jaw is clenched shut. Tianhua has to physically pry it open with a sword to get the medicine in.
Wow. So even a divine miracle has this kind of brutal physical reality to it.
Exactly. And then the description of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the source material gets fascinating. It blends the mythic with almost, like, medical detail.
Okay, tell us about that.
So the medicine hits the Zongguang, that's like the central energy point of the body.
Oh, core, right.
Then it goes through what they call the three passes, circulates through all four limbs.
Okay.
And then rotates through 84,000 pores.
84,000?
Yeah.
Why that number?
It's not just a random big number. In this context, it basically signifies everywhere, total saturation. It's like a complete systemic chi reboot at a cellular level.
Fixing not just the wound, but everything the magic attack damaged internally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A full system repair instantly.
And it works fast, you said.
Incredibly fast. Okay. Just one Shichin later, that's about 2 hours in our time, Feihu wakes up. Screaming in pain, sure, but he's alive.
He thinks he's dead.
Yeah, he thinks he's meeting a spirit that he's already crossed over. That speed, that reversal, that's the first big takeaway here. When an immortal intervenes, death is basically put on hold.
Okay, physical healing, check. But then comes the emotional fallout.
Oh, yeah, the womb medicine can't touch. Tianhua kneels, tells Feihu who the son lost 13 years ago since he was 3.
Must have been overwhelming for Feihu.
It is, but the reunion sours almost immediately. Tianhua looks around. He asks, where's mom? Where's Jia Shi? And he doesn't know the story yet. So he jumps to conclusions. He actually accuses his father, calls him heartless for, you know, leaving a woman behind, assuming she was captured back in the capital. Choish.
Oof. That's rough. He's projecting his own fears, maybe?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But that accusation forces Feihu to reveal the real reason he rebelled, the actual trauma.
Which is?
Feihu just breaks down, crying uncontrollably.
Yeah.
He tells Tianhua what happened to Jia Shi. King Zhu abused her or tried to deceive her.
Okay.
But she fought back. She maintained her honor.
Yeah.
And to preserve her chastity, absolutely. She jumped to her death from the star-picking tower.
Oh, my God. Suicide?
Yes. And that's not even all of it.
There's more.
Feihu's sister, Tianhua's aunt, she confronted King Zhu directly about his behavior. A loyal admonishment.
And the king.
Had her killed, too. Right there.
Yeah.
For speaking truth to power.
Two women in his family. His wife and his sister, both dead because of the king.
Exactly. And Tianhua hears this. And the shock, the grief, it's too much. The text says he basically fainted dead away from the sheer rage and shock.
Unbelievable. From a divine miracle to that kind of raw human tragedy in moments.
The narrative whiplash is intentional, I think. It slams you with the weight of it all.
So when Tianhua comes to, what happens?
Everything changes. The Taoist student, the Liang Qixi, is gone. Now it's just a son consumed by vengeance.
He abandons his path.
Instantly. He says, I will not go back to King Feng Mountain. No more quiet, steady. Instead, he vows, I will kill my way to Chaoish to avenge my mother.
Wow. So that family tragedy becomes the fuel. It redirects all that supernatural power he's gained.
Precisely. It's the ignition. Human rage channeling immortal power into the mortal world.
he gets a chance to use it pretty quickly, doesn't he?
Almost immediately. Chen-Tong, the guy who nearly killed Fei-Hu with that magical dart, he shows up again, probably to finish the job.
And Fei-Hu must be terrified, even healed.
The text says his face was like earth. Yeah, he just escaped death from this guy's weapon. Understandable fear.
So Chen-Tong goes for his signature move again, the fire dragon dart.
Huolong Biao, yeah, he throws it. This is the weapon that nearly killed Fei-Hu himself. It's proven deadly.
So how does Tianhua stop it? What can possibly block that kind of magic?
Remember the flower basket?
The one holding mystery.
That's the one. Tianhua just turns the basket towards the incoming dart.
Yeah.
And that's it. The dart just stops.
Yeah.
Gets sucked in, neutralized, collected inside the basket.
So the basket isn't just holding mysterious items. It eye a mysterious item, like a magical defense shield or a vacuum cleaner for deadly darts.
Uh-huh. Yeah, something like that. It seems to be a high-level artifact specifically designed to capture and contain other magical weapons. Instantly renders Chen-Tong's best shot useless.
Okay, so Chen-Tong is now weaponless, facing this kid who just ate his magic dart with a basket. He must be furious.
Enraged. He loses his magic weapon, so he turns his anger directly on Tianhua, charges him.
Bad move.
Very bad move. Because now Tianhua draws his weapon, the Moi Sword.
Ah, the sword from his master, King Su Dao de Zunjin.
Yes. And the source really emphasizes this isn't just some sword. It calls it a Zenshan treasure, a mountain guarding treasure. Supreme.
And the description, it's weird, right? Not metal.
Explicitly not copper, not iron, and not gold. It's described as the refined essence of Ganyuan Balian Jing.
Ganyuan Balian Jing, what does that translate to, roughly?
Something like refined essence of primordial stellar iron or celestial ore essence.
Yep.
Basically, it's not made of anything earthly.
It's forged from cosmic stuff.
Pretty much. It's like a weapon made from the building blocks of the universe. It's, as you said before, a narrative cheat code.
So the fight must be epic.
Actually, no fight at all.
What?
Tianhua just points the Moi Sword at Chen-Tong.
Okay.
A light, about the size of a teacup, flashes out from the sword, and Chen-Tong's head just falls off his body.
Just like that. No clash, no struggle.
Instantaneous. Effortless. That's the difference the source is showing between a skilled mortal warrior using magic items and someone wielding a truly divine artifact powered by, well, immortal cultivation. It's absolute power.
Wow. Okay, so villain gone. Pass secured.
Yep. The army breakthrough Tong Pass. Big victory. But there's no celebration.
Why not?
Jianhua has to leave. Immediately.
But he just vowed vengeance. He wants to go to Chaoge.
He does. But he says his master gave him strict orders. He has a task to complete. He promises his father they'll meet again soon. In Jiki, that's the stronghold of the rebellion.
So even with all this power and personal motivation, he's still bound by his master's commands.
And it seems so. It reinforces that his power isn't entirely his own to wield freely. He's an asset, deployed strategically by higher powers. Devastating when used, but withdrawn quickly.
Leaving Fei-Hu to continue the journey. Alive, victorious, but still facing dangers.
Exactly. And the next danger isn't far off. They march about 80 lines.
About 40 kilometers, roughly 25 miles.
Yeah, something like that. They reach the next checkpoint, Twanyin Pass.
And who's waiting there? Let me guess. Trouble.
You got it. The commander is Chen Wu.
Chen Wu. Any relation to Chen-Tong?
His older brother.
Oh, boy. And he's probably heard what happened at Tong Pass.
He has. And he is, understandably, furious. Wants revenge for his brother's decapitation.
So another fight. Magic versus...
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. The story shifts gears completely.
How so?
Chen Lu is all set for a fight. But his general, a guy named He Shen, pulls him back.
Advises caution.
More than caution.
Yeah.
Shen says, basically, stop. Do not fight them head on.
Why not? They have the advantage of defense, presumably.
Because He Shen is smart. He realizes Huang Fei-Hu and his generals are tough opponents in open combat anyway. But more importantly, they now know the enemy has access to someone like Tianhua.
Someone who can neutralize magic weapons and kill commanders with a flash of light from a cosmic sword.
Exactly. He Shen gets it. Direct confrontation, whether physical or magical, is probably suicide against that kind of power.
Yep.
They just saw proof.
So brute force is out. Magic is out. What's left?
Cunning. Strategy. He Shen advises Chen Wu to switch tactics completely. Use Zikin.
Zikin. What's that mean?
Roughly, wisdom to capture or seizing through strategy. Intelligence over force.
A strategic trap.
Precisely. He Shen proposes a plan to eliminate the entire Huang clan, not just Fei-Hu, but his sons and generals too, without drawing a single arrow.
Wow. After seeing instant resurrection and instant death via magic sword, the biggest threat becomes a clever plan.
That's the pivot. The source material itself acknowledges the limits of raw power, even divine power. When faced with overwhelming force, the ultimate counter might just be a really smart, bloodless trap. Strategy trumps magic.
Feihu hits Tongguan Pass. He's exhausted, expecting a fight, right? But the commander there, General Chen Wu, greets him in a way that's just completely unexpected.
Utterly shocking, yeah. Chen Wu meets him like he's visiting royalty, not like he's a wanted fugitive. The sources are specific.
Yeah.
He comes out without armor or weapons, calls him Great King.
Wow.
I mean, no loyal general would ever do that for someone fleeing the capital under a cloud.
Yeah, that sets off alarm bells, surely. But before Feihu can really process it, Chen Wu gives this speech. And it's not just flattery, is it? He gives this radical justification for Feihu's actions.
It's really the core philosophical point here. Chen Wu praises Feihu's family's generations of service. But then he says something extraordinary for the time. He argues the situation is now one where the sovereign is indebted to the minister, Junfu Yuchen.
Whoa, okay. What does that mean exactly?
It basically flips the whole mandate of heaven idea on its head. He's saying it's not Feihu who's wrong, it's the king who's failed in his duty to Feihu. It essentially validates the rebellion from a moral standpoint.
But hang on. If Chen Wu genuinely believes the king is failing and that Feihu is justified, why isn't he joining Feihu? Is this like a genuine philosophical agreement, or is it a trap?
It's a trap, a very sophisticated one. He's playing on Feihu's exhaustion, his desperation. He's using the language of a Nan Chen, you know, the loyal minister forced into a difficult position, precisely to lure Feihu in.
Okay.
If he truly believed it, he'd probably join him, but he doesn't.
And we see just how ruthless Chen Wu is when they talk about something else. Feihu's men recently killed Chen Wu's own brother, Chen Tong, right?
That's right. During the escape. And Chen Wu's reaction. He basically shrugs it off, says his brother didn't know the mandate of heaven, essentially deserved it.
He validates the killing of his own brother.
To keep up the act, yes. It's chilling. Feihu's general, Huang Ming, even remarks on it how different the brothers were.
Yeah.
Like foolish and wise or sour and sweet fruit from the same tree.
That dismissal of his own blood connection, that should have been the absolute final warning sign for Feihu, shouldn't it?
You'd think so. But instead, Chen Wu insists Feihu stay for a feast, rest overnight, says he's exhausted. And Feihu, even though the source says he feels uneasy, thinking this is not a place to stay, he agrees.
Why? Why does this experienced general fall for it?
I think he's just worn down. Politically, emotionally, he's lost everything. He desperately wants to believe someone sees his cause as just. That moment of wanting to trust, that's what nearly kills him.
Okay, so he stays. What happens next?
Segment 2. After the feast, the illusion just crumbles. Feihu can't sleep. He's alone. And the weight of it all hits him. He's lamenting the loss of, get this, 7 generations of loyalty to the Shang dynasty. Just gone.
7 generations. Wow. And his anger is still burning, right, towards the king?
Oh, absolutely. He thinks about the dim-witted ruler, the king who caused his wife's disgrace and death, who killed his sister. He's biting his teeth, vowing this isn't just about escape anymore. If he gets to West Qi, if King Wu takes him in and gives him troops.
Yeah.
He wants revenge.
There's a poem, too, isn't there? He writes something down.
Yes, a poem he writes in the dead of night. It really shows his state of mind. Lines like, 5 passes have roads truly perilous. You feel the dread. And then this line, like a bird losing its forest, the family is broken. It's pure despair.
Heartbreaking. But then things take a turn, don't they? This is where it gets really wild.
Absolutely. Around the third watch, maybe 3 a.m., something happens. It's not just his inner turmoil anymore. A powerful wind swirls into the hall.
And the description isn't just, oh, it got windy, right? It's more supernatural.
Exactly. The text describes it poetically.
Yeah.
It extinguishes the candle, sends clouds moving, scatters yellow leaves. It feels like an omen, a presence.
And then it's not just wind.
No. A hand literally reaches out, snuffs the candle flame,
yeah.
And a voice speaks. It's his deceased wife, Lady Jia.
His wife's ghost.
Appearing to him directly. It's not just his grief playing tricks. This feels like divine intervention, confirmation, perhaps, that his cause is seen as righteous by powers beyond the court.
So even though the state calls him a rebel,
that the supernatural seems to be on his side. And Lady Jia has an urgent message. Great disaster is upon you. She specifically warns about fierce flames, Lie and Lai Qin, coming to engulf them. She tells him, wake everyone, watch over your children, our 3 motherless children.
Wow. So the moment his own judgment failed him, trusting Chen Wu's political talk, Something else steps in to save him, literally saves his life.
It pulls him back from the brink, forces him to see the reality of the trap.
Okay, segment three, he gets the warning. What happens? Does he manage to wake everyone in time?
He does. He immediately rouses his generals, Huang Ming, Zhu Ji. They were sleeping deeply, totally exhausted from the journey, but Lady Jia's warning cuts through.
And do they find proof of the trap, the fire?
Instantly. Huang Ming checks the main gate. It's bolted from the outside. Dao Suming, they're locked in.
Oh, man.
They have to grab axes, smash their way out, and as they break through, they see it, just like Lady Jia warned. The whole area outside is piled high with firewood. Hun Zi Che Ping Signing. Chen Wu wasn't planning an arrest.
He was planning to burn them all alive.
The whole family, the whole retinue, total annihilation. That's when Chen Wu shows up with his troops, carrying torches. But he's too late.
They're already breaking out. Is there a confrontation?
Oh, yes. Fei Hu immediately calls him out. Yesterday's high sentiment, he says, turned to flowing water. All that philosophical talk. Meaningless now.
Does Chen Wu even try to justify it?
No more pretense. He admits his real goal. To cut the grass by the roots, Dinjo Chugin, eliminate the entire Huang family line, no more talk of the king being indebted to the minister.
Just pure, ruthless calculation.
Exactly. He reveals himself as the ultimate, perhaps most dangerous, kind of loyalist. Loyal to the system, to the point of exterminating a perceived threat, even one with generations of service.
So they fight.
It's swift. Fei Hu, on his legendary five-color divine ox, doesn't waste time. The source says it only takes a few exchanges. He runs Chen Wu through with his spear, right through the heart.
And they escape.
They fight their way out of the pass. The source calls this place Tuanyun Pass amidst the chaos and the beginning of the fire Chen Wu intended for them. They make it out.
Okay, they survived the betrayal, the ambush, but they're not safe yet, are they? Where are they headed now?
Segment four. As dawn breaks, they're heading towards the next major pass, Jipai Pass. They're battered, exhausted, but they're alive.
And this is where the story delivers maybe the cruelest twist yet. Huang Ming, his general, actually advises Fei Hu against more fighting here. Why?
Because, as Huang Ming points out, the commander of Jipai Pass isn't some treacherous stranger. It's family. It's the great master, Tai Leye. It's Huang Feiyu's own father, Huang Gun.
His father commands the next pass. Well, this is awful.
It brings that core conflict, Zong versus Zhao, state versus family, right to the forefront in the most personal way imaginable. Fei Hu just escaped a man who dismissed his own brother's death for the state.
Only to run straight into his own father. What does Huang Gun know? Does he know Fei Hu's side of the story?
All Huang Gun has heard, according to the sources, is that his eldest son is a rebel. A traitor who's killed loyal generals on his way out of the capital.
So he doesn't see the nuance, the justification, the supernatural warning. He just sees a rebel son.
Exactly. And Huang Gun reacts purely as a commander loyal to the throne. His duty comes first. Source is chillingly specific here.
What does he do?
He orders 3,000 troops into battle formations. And he prepares, wait for it, 10 prison carts.
10. For his own son and grandchildren.
10 prison carts, ready to capture the rebel and send him back to the capital, Chao Zhe, for judgment. It's not just about stopping him. It's a public demonstration of his own unwavering loyalty to the king, proving it outweighs even his bond to his son.
This is devastating. Chen Wu's betrayal is one thing, calculated political ruthlessness. But this feels different. This is his father, choosing state duty over his own flesh and blood.
And you have to understand the weight of this in that cultural context.
Yeah.
Filial piety, Zhao, obeying your parents, it's foundational. But so is Zong, loyalty to the ruler. Fei Hu is now in an impossible bind.
If he fights his father, he violates Zhao. If he surrenders, he betrays his own justified cause, maybe even the mandate of heaven that seems to be subtly supporting him through things like his wife's warning.
Precisely. He escaped the deceptive words of a fake ally, only to face the cold, hard reality of institutional loyalty embodied by his own father. The crisis is no longer just about survival. It's deeply philosophical and deeply personal.